Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters, your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Chris Herndon joins me now. Chris, what are we listening to?
This is a song called 463, a payon to the double play, kind of, sort of, by Toronto rapper and former minor league shortstop Richard Buck 65 Turfey, sending that out to the Toronto Raptors. Sorry, not Toronto Raptors. Toronto Blue Jays into the World Series.
All right. We've delivered you a magnet. That's good. You got your refrigerator magnet.
Yep.
The season is ready to go.
Can plan my life now.
And we have the T-shirt, and this is the first 5,000 to get this T-shirt tomorrow. And your assessment is?
It looks good. It looks good. I probably won't get one, and B, even if I did, it probably wouldn't fit me. So it probably doesn't matter. I say, what size is that?
It's extra large.
I need one more.
XL.
I need one more X.
From there.
The single X would be a little snug. A little snug on me.
I don't like a snug shirt.
Yeah.
So the people on this 25th anniversary shirt, again, first 5,000, you got John Jarrett.
My son would wear it, though. So if anyone from Grizzly staff is listening and wants to give me a shirt, I'll give it to my son, who's 6'6", but is a little bit not a little bit more narrow around the waist
quite,
than I am.
He hasn't quite filled in yet. Jaren and Ja in the foreground, and then in the background we got J Will, we got the Core Four, we have Pow, Shane, Tayshawn, Brevin, Lorenzen, Elliot.
Who is that, Stan? Who's that between Pow and Zeebo? It looks like Brandon Wright. I know it's
between
not Pow and Zeebo up top.
That's Mike Conley.
Oh, is it?
That's Mike.
That does not look like Mike. I have a bad angle.
He's way across the other side of the table here. That's the Core Four. They're standing together. And then you got Grizz. And so we were discussing this off the air. The obvious omissions here are Desmond Bane and Mike Miller and maybe Dylan.
No, I think those are probably the three. In terms of most consequential players, now, you have some guys on there who...
I mean, they're there for other reasons.
They're for the totality of their work with the franchise, which includes playing, you know, with Elliot and Brevin and Tayshawn
are the three who, as strictly as players...
would not be there, but they were players who also served the franchise in other capacities, and their totality of achievement with the franchise certainly warrants that.
And Ren, honestly, wouldn't either be there relative to what Mike Miller accomplished as a player on the franchise. Right?
Who's this?
Ren. Lorenzo.
Yeah, and well, there's also obviously
there's
special circumstances there.
I'm not saying they shouldn't be on the shirt.
Right.
But it is interesting that Desmond Bane is not on the shirt and Mike Miller is not on the shirt.
I think if you were ranking the greats in franchise history, which may or not be something I've done this summer, those two guys would make the cut, certainly.
All right. Well, yesterday we got the good news that Ja's going to play.
I think everyone assumed that, but it's not certain until it's certain, and it's still not certain until they throw the ball up. But the plan, you know, is for him to play. So, like, you know, knock on whatever and, like, you know, cross whatever and, like, you know, let's go. And so it sounds like we're going to get John Jarrett on the floor in an opener, which is for the first time in a few years, I think, because Jaron didn't play the opener last year because of his hamstring thing, and then Ja didn't play the opener the year before because he was suspended by the NBA, and so it's been at least 3 years since those guys have been on the floor together in an opener.
I want to get to the Ja Jaron stuff, which you wrote about in your preview today, which I urge people to read. But before that, the update on Ty Jerome. 4 weeks. How did you react? It's like, well, it's better than the alternative. Really, that's too
bad. Mean, it's sort of middle of the pack. Yep. I mean, I worst case scenario would have been, you know, this is going to require some kind of surgery and what have you. I did not. I had already assumed he was not going to be active to start the season.
Right.
If you had asked me to guess yesterday what it was going to be, I would have guessed like week to week.
Right.
Maybe this is a little bit worse than week to week, but, you know, we'll see. I mean, we'll check back in a month on that.
It really is a sort of hold-on scenario now, isn't it? Like, if I could give you, I'm going to give you 400. I mean, they're going to be at 500 when Zach Edey returns.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Easy, I would definitely take that. I think the reasonable hope at this point would be that the team gets into the play-in range. Most people already had them in the play-in range, myself included, but that's a range.
That's
like,
a range.
You know, maybe you're on the lower end, right?
Right.
So the reasonable hope is that you get into the play-in range still, and that when you arrive there, you're a better team than your record shows because Edie's back and Ty Jerome's back and all, you know, that you come out of the season better than you're going into it, and along the way you win enough to give yourself a chance.
The hope is that you ultimately get into the play-in range. You may fall out of the play-in range during.
I'm talking about where you are when the season ends.
That you get
that you're a play-in team. Hoping for hope at this point. I think before these injuries, people weren't projecting Grizzlies to be above the play-in line, but that was a reasonable hope.
Right.
I think that would be quite an achievement at this point to be a top six team. I think it's still a very reasonable goal to be a play-in team, and then if you're a better team than your record suggests when you get there, you got a shot to do something.
Okay. Apropos of that, and I talked about this in the open. You do have, and you mentioned this yesterday, and certainly it's in your piece, you've got Ja and Jaron together.
Yep.
And when they are together, which has not been a lot.
Right.
The results are good.
Yeah. I mean, some of those are better talent around them. The year they won 56, that was with Desmond Bane, Dylan Brooks, and Steven Adams right out in the starting lineup. But some of that is like earlier on, right? And so it's like, you know, the talent is varied over the course of the time, but the Grizzlies have won 60% of their games and those guys are on the floor. Do I think they can win in a 60% rate right now with the current healthy talent around them? No. But do I think they can win enough? Right. I think they should be able to, to stay afloat.
Just to go over those numbers that I mentioned at the outset of the show once more, they have only played 125 games between the two of them together in one season.
Yeah.
It's kind of amazing. Like that's not 140 games.
Yeah. In terms of you combine their games played. Right.
And you get to 125.
And in that season was also the only season where there were at least 50 games where they're both on the floor at the same time. Right.
Yeah. And they in 21-22. And that's the year they get to 56 wins. They have in their six seasons only averaged 36.5 games per year playing together.
I mean, there are two of those were lost years. One for individually, not necessarily for team. The year that Jaron missed almost the entire season with the knee injury and only came back at the very end as a shell of himself, Jaron played like 10 games that season.
Right.
And then 2 years ago when Ja had the league suspension and then the shoulder injury, he played 9 games. So you had two seasons right there that really only one of those guys really played. And that's two out of the six right there.
All right. You talked about this a little bit yesterday, that this really is a pivotal year for Jaron and Ja. They've already pivoted. I'll use that word again. They've already pivoted away from the Ja-Jaron Dez configuration, and depending on how this goes, they could.
I think the franchise has a decision to make about whether their stated plan to reshape the team around Ja and Jaron is a plan they can carry forward after this season. I don't think that decision is contingent on the win loss record. I don't think you say, if you win 47, you stay the course, and if you win less than that, you don't. Or where they fit in the standings. It's more about how the the trajectory of the project as you come through the season and how much you still believe in the idea. But I do think a choice needs to be made, and I think the season will determine what that choice is.
You say in the piece, or you wonder in the piece, whether it is too late in their careers or in their time together for the one step back, two steps forward strategy.
Right.
Why would it be? Why? I mean,
it's mostly a jaw. It's mostly a jaw question, because I mean, they're 20. First of all, 26 is when, like, you know, neither of these guys are Giannis or Jokic, but 26 is like when you break through.
Right.
Typically, this is not going to be the year they break through. It doesn't look like, right. And so, you know, when is the supporting cast going to be ready to do that with them? If it is it when they're 27, 28, 29? So there's that. But then the jaw thing is, have we already seen the best? The best season of his career happened 4 years ago. I still believe that when he's healthy, he can be an all-NBA level player, that he is an all-NBA level player when he's on the floor. But how much are you going to be on the floor, and how much can you retain that? And so even if you can be an all-NBA caliber player at age 26, is he still going to be that at 27, 28, 29, 30? And that's a question about the viability of the project. That's a question about whether to sign him to a new contract after this one. And so I think those questions are very much there with Ja because of his style of play. If you look at guards like him, set aside Derrick Rose. Derrick Rose had a career-crushing injury. That has not happened on Ja Morant. He's had a lot of wear and tear. If you look at guys who are most like him, super athletic guards whose jump shots haven't quite come around. Russell Westbrook is the obvious name to throw out. You can throw out Iverson. You can throw out John Wall. Like, those guys were all all-stars post age 26. But they weren't all-stars at age 33. And so if the best years of Morant have not already happened, they're right now. They're the next 3 years that's on his contract. It's not the period after that.
Do we feel like we've seen much diminishment of his game?
Well, what people would point to, justifiably, is that so the three questions that he brought into the NBA with him were defense, durability, and shooting. Durability has been a major concern. Defense, I think it's gotten a little bit better. That's the least of those three concerns for me now, although I certainly wouldn't call him a plus defender.
Right.
The shooting has not really come around, and that's the thing people want to see come around, because as your athleticism lessens, your skill improves, and it balances out. But the other thing outside of that you would point to, turn from the weaknesses to the strengths, and I reference this, I don't get to the numbers, but I reference this in passing, the percentage of shots he has gotten at the rim has declined three straight seasons. How much of that is his athleticism declining? How much of that is a choice for self-preservation?
Right.
Either way, you're still getting to the rim less, you know? And so that's something I think a lot of people have pointed to as a sign of decline. I don't necessarily think that's a sign of decline, but I think it's a perfectly valid point to raise. And so I
guess I've given up on him ever being a good shooter. But I do wonder if this stuff, I wonder if he would have made more progress as a shooter had he been healthier to work on his game.
I don't think he's ever going to be a 39% three-point shooter. Have I ruled out that he becomes a 33, 34% three-point shooter, which given the rest of his game would be great? I haven't ruled that out now.
Yeah. In terms of Jaren, have we seen the best of Jaren?
Maybe, but if he can be what he's been the last couple of seasons and stay on that plateau for the next 5 years, that'd be pretty great. You know, he was 17th in the All-NBA vote, and a lot of people, myself included, think he should have been a little bit higher than that. The question with Jaren is sort of the balance of stuff, and I think there's a real question for Jaren, for both of these guys, but for Jaren, there's a real question of sort of team environment. He can do so many different things, and it's about modulating that, but there are real questions for me about whether he's going to be put in the best situation this season. On offense, I think the offense last season that Ja hated was good for Jaren, and now we'll see how Jaren fits into this new situation. And on defense, he has been at, really on both ends, but particularly on defense, I think he has been at his best when he plays with the big center, which they had with Edie. Now Edie's gone. And so is Jock Landale good enough to let Jaren stay at the four, which is where they prefer to play him? Or is Landale struggle enough, and then there's not enough depth around him that you have to play Jaren primarily at the five, which exacerbates the rebounding problem and exacerbates the foul problem? So I think the Grizzlies want to play Jaren at the four next to a big center. They want Ja to have a big center to screen for him. They want the big center. They went out and got him in Zach Edey, and now Edey's not playing. And so I wonder about Jaren being used in the way that maximizes his abilities on both ends of the floor in the first month of the season.
I actually wondered about like how different his role will be here before Zach Edey comes back, in contrast to how it will be.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, the not playing with the center thing has been a problem on defense in terms of maximizing Jaren. It hasn't on offense at all. Like, you can just spread the floor and, you know, whatever. That can be good. But I think the best thing for him defensively and the best thing for the team is to play Jaren at the four.
And then, I mean, you sort of, this is another point that you made in your piece today, is that it really went out. This team is built around a big and a plan Ja.
Yeah.
And
it feels like, okay, we got to try to make this work with Ja. Let's nip everything we around the edges to fit his game and see what happens. And now you don't, and this sounds like an excuse, and I hope it's not treated as such. I hope they give it time and to come together. But right out of the gate, like, two of the four things that you've sort of done to cater to Ja are just off the board completely in terms of the guard depth around him, in terms of having Zach Edey there. They're not there.
All right. You can read that piece over at the Daily Memphian. We do have games tonight. Do you care that the games have moved to NBC? Is that something that interests you?
I mean, NBC, I mean, because since Jeffrey, like, tutored me in how to, like, get regular television, like, NBC is something I can access. So I'm in favor of broadcast television now that I can re-access broadcast television. And so I wish there were more games on NBC.
Yeah, all right. Well, we got Rockets Thunder. Your thoughts on that one? Both, I mean, the Rockets are the more intriguing
team.
The
Rockets are super interesting because, you know, they've added Durant, and then they lost Fred VanVleet. And, like, if you look in the preseason, I looked at one preseason box score, and they won this game, but they gave up, like, 130 points to Charlotte or whatever doing it. They threw out a starting lineup in a preseason game that was Alperen Şengün and old pal Steven Adams, two centers starting, with Jabari Smith, who's a power forward, playing the three. Kevin Durant, who's like 7'1", listed, playing the two. Then Amin Thompson, who was basically their power forward last season, playing the one.
Oh, my God.
And so that sounds like a science experiment to me. So, like, you know, let's do that against this Oklahoma City team.
I've paid no attention. Does Reed Shepard played and been good?
I mean, I didn't watch a lot of preseason basketball. He's played, and I he's had some decent numbers in some of the games. Stuff I've heard has been, maybe it's not been so great. I think people don't know.
Yeah. KD gets the new contract. 2 years. Thoughts?
Yeah. I mean, when you trade for that guy, I mean, it probably makes sense to make it more than a 1 year situation. You know, 2 years is not forever. I don't even know if they could have done it more than 2 years because I'm not sure where his age fits. There's certain rules about extensions after a certain age. But they didn't max him out either. I mean, it's a lot of money, but it's not the most they could have given him. So I think once you're pot committed to Kevin Durant, it probably makes sense to lock him up for a couple more years.
And how do the Thunder not, I mean, an injury, I guess, right? Injury, it feels inevitable.
Well, injury can derail anything, but it would take a lot to derail them because they are the deepest team in the league.
Right.
And so,
but they lose Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, they're not winning the title.
Yes. Sure. If you're not winning the title, they might still win 50 games without him. Games, that's the thing. But if you look at the Grizzlies injury situation, which is you're missing your starting center, Isaiah Hartenstein.
Right.
You're missing three of your four best bench players, so whoever that is for the Thunder. You take that same group out,
they'd roll on.
They're still a 50-win team.
Right. Yeah. And then Warriors and Lakers, no LeBron.
Yeah, we'll see on the LeBron thing. And LeBron might be the greatest player ever. So, like, I'm sure when he plays, he's going to be good. But I just believe he will play fewer games with less. I'd have to look back on his career and see what year. He has not missed a lot of games in his career. I think he may play the fewest games of his career unless I'm forgetting some season. And I think he will play the fewest games with the least amount of production of any year of his career, which is supposed to happen when you're 41,
It does feel like this could get messy, and largely because of his ego. Like, he does not want to be Vince Carter, you know, or
I think
whatever,
there's a lot
you know?
Of downside to the Lakers. One of my predictions I made when I did the Nate Duncan podcast with him, at the end of that podcast, one of my predictions, this was several weeks and many injuries ago, before the LeBron injury, before all these Grizzlies injuries. A prediction I made was that one of either the Spurs or the Grizzlies would finish ahead of one of either the Warriors or the Lakers in the standings.
I see.
And I would stick to that, but I would narrow it that I think it'll be the Spurs over the Lakers at this point. Yeah.
All right, Chris, thanks very much. Hey, if you're a Grizzlies staffer, his Ben, his son, needs a t-shirt, so get him a t-shirt. All right, we're going to take a break, talk to Fishman on the other side. Jeff Calkins, Show, 92.9 FM ESPN.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, back on the Jeff Calkins Show. Joined now by Charles Fishman, our man in Washington, D.C., author of three New York Times bestsellers, most recently One Giant Leap, about the extraordinary efforts of ordinary Americans to get us to the moon. Also a three-time winner of the Gerald Loeb Award for Excellence in Business Writing and a retired Mississippi River tugboat deckhand. He joins us now. Yesterday was a hard day for you, Charles, wasn't it?
Yesterday was a hard day, but lots of people in the audience have gone through this, of course, and everything's relative, but we lost our big dog. We've had three dogs at the same time for a little while. Cleo was my 50th birthday present, brought home on April 1st, 2011.
Yeah.
One of the boldest presents my wife has ever gotten me. The other one
you
was
didn't
also
know it was
a dog.
Coming? You didn't know it was coming.
You know, they went off together on Saturday morning. the 11-year-old, the 9-year-old, and my wife in a car. I kind of knew something was up. The last thing right. I said was, "Please don't buy a dog that I don't get to meet first." and if you buy a dog, please look at the paws to make sure we're not getting a dog that's too big. 4 hours later, they walk in with a spectacular little black lab puppy, ignoring instruction number one. And literally, she had feet the size of a baby elephant. So we knew she was going to be a big dog. She was the dog, you know. She was literally the dog of our children's lives. Maya was 9, and Nicholas was 11. So you know, they've grown up. You know, they were in junior high. They were in grade school.
It's interesting. It's just a sadness, as you write. Like anyone who's had a dog or a cat, whatever, has had to go through this. The moment that you decide that's it, you bring the vet over or you head into the vets, and it's a sad day. It's interesting that, I mean, it's not a human being, but it is, and it has been a really, I mean, the truth of the matter is you have been around Cleo more over those 15 years than any other living being. That is probably
more
true.
Than my wife, more
yeah,
than my
she kids. Goes to work.
Absolutely.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you're
absolutely.
Yeah,
you know? Certainly more than mom and dad.
Right.
And the dogs fill up my life, I would say. I wouldn't say my life would be empty without them, but I inherited dogs from my wife. I grew up in a cat family, and the dogs fill up my life. And well, it's also, there's something a little special about a dog if you're an adult. I know the first moments of Cleo's life. We have pictures. My wife found pictures and sent them around to everybody a couple of days ago of Cleo riding home in Nicholas's lap. Cleo is 12 weeks old and Nicholas is 11 that day. And of course, I know yesterday when she, right. You know,
you know, the full span, the dog the full span. So, 15 years is a good run, Charles. She's a good dog.
Here.
And you got her. He's got Jeffrey. He got her five guys. They got her five guys as a going away present, which is
just
I have
to
understand,
say,
kind of extravagant.
Our yeah. marriage. We don't talk about my marriage very much to my brilliant, wonderful wife. I said, let's get her McDonald's. Trish said, we're not giving the dog McDonald's as her last that's meal. Go to Five Guys.
That's ridiculous. She just wanted the Five Guys
the number
herself.
Of walks.
Yeah. How many walks?
She loved the Five Guys. Cleo and I have been on 10,600 walks together. We literally walked 10,000 miles at least, probably more like 15,000 miles, because most of the walks are longer than a mile. So that's kind of nice. We count everything in this family, of course. There you go. Anyway,
okay, I want to count something else. Clear. Here, I'm going to count something else. I forgot. Last week, I asked you, would the government still be shut down when we revisited on this week? And I think you I think you were wrong, right? Didn't you say it would have been settled by now? Didn't you?
No, that's not correct. You can go back and listen.
That's fine. I take your word for it.
By last week, I had given up predicting. Today, ladies and gentlemen, do you know what day it is? I bet you Jeffrey knows what
I
day
bet.
Is.
Let me just take a wild guess. 21.
That is right. It's day 21.
It's because you sent me a text that said government shutdown update day 21. That's why I was able to get it.
It's day 21 of the government shutdown. What's the longest government shutdown? Do you remember that?
No.
35 days during the previous Trump administration. So yesterday, one of the financial wires did a story saying,
yeah, I saw this.
No one's paying attention to the government shutdown. It's going to last beyond Thanksgiving. That was kind of sobering. Like, whoa, Thanksgiving itself is 37 days from now. So that would make it, if it was solved the day after Thanksgiving, it would be a 59-day government shutdown. That's 15% of the year. Then yesterday, Kevin Hassett, who's director of the Council of Economic Advisors in the White House, senior administration official and senior economic policy official, said the government shutdown will be resolved this week.
I saw that. He said because now that more pressure will be brought to bear. What did he mean? I didn't understand.
He had a kind of, I think it's a little bit of an oddball theory, but his theory was the Democrats weren't going to negotiate seriously until after Saturday's No Kings protests. And now that the protests are over, they'll negotiate seriously. In fact, the problem isn't the Democrats. The House isn't in session. And Donald Trump has not expressed any interest in having talks to settle the government shutdown. But that's Kevin Hassett literally went on CNBC. So you're going on the nation's leading financial network and saying the shutdown will be done this week. That seems reasonable. I wanted to say Kalshi, what do you call those places?
What do you call it? What do you call
predictive
it?
Website.
Polymarkets, right?
Yeah. I thought Polymarket is an actual place.
Polymarket is one, and
it's
Kalshi
a place.
Is one.
Yeah, they're different. Yeah, right. Go ahead.
Right. They're same. They do the same thing.
Kalshi feels like I could wish I could buy a quinoa bowl.
It's literally just a prediction market. Sounds like what they call it. Yeah.
Okay. Anyway,
prediction markets. They say 64% of people on Kalshi say the government shutdown will last more than 35 days, and that's two more weeks. So anyway, I'll go with Kevin Hassett. Let's get it resolved this week. Lots of people will get their pay, but going without their paycheck. I just wanted to say one thing about the No Kings protests. I know you don't want me to talk about the No Kings protests. Speaker of the House Mike Johnson called them hate America protests. And I just want to say that is disgusting. The idea that anybody protesting under the First Amendment, I don't know, we pay a lot of love to the Second Amendment in this country. How about the First Amendment? The First Amendment is the First Amendment for a reason. And the key of the First Amendment is your right to protest and petition your own government. There's nothing hate America about those protests.
No, I mean, since you brought it up, I was out at the one here. I went out to report on it. And
as
the truth of the matter is, it wasn't whatever. Like, I don't know why. I honestly don't know why they went out of their way to try to mischaracterize who was protesting. Antifa or paid or like there were thousands and thousands of Memphians out there. And they were your neighbors, and maybe they were neighbors who disagree with you, but they were neighbors who disagree with you on things. But they weren't Antifa, and they weren't paid, and they were just, you know, people out there who are honestly, I ran into two people, lifelong Republicans, conservatives, who were there because they were deeply concerned about the Constitution. You know, so whatever. Like, I, anyway, right, but right. I didn't want to talk about that. Let's go on.
I want to just say protest from whatever side is the opposite of hate America. It's the deepest form of patriotism. When you say, I think we can do better. Not everybody has to agree with my vision or your vision or the protester's vision or Mike Johnson's vision of what would make America better. But thinking about it, imagining it, taking time from your day to express how you think we could be a better nation and a better people, that's the opposite of hate America. That's love America. Those were love America protests, as they would have been if conservatives had been protesting. So that's all. I just think that kind of language.
I didn't understand it. I'm moving on. I forgot why I flagged the Nobel Prize in economics winners as something that would be interesting. I've forgotten completely what they won it for. But last week I noted it. I said this would be something interesting to talk about. Why are they interesting? Who won it? Why are we talking about this?
I was so glad you brought this up. The Nobel Prize in Economics is the last Nobel to be awarded every year. It's not technically a Nobel. It was added after Alfred Nobel passed away because they wanted economics to be acknowledged and rewarded and focused on as well. And you wanted to talk about it because the three academics, the three professors who won this year's Nobel Prize in Economics, focused on the economics of innovation, on national growth, on how economies evolve, improve, innovate, are creative, and get better. And that's a kind of a wild thing to be rewarding in terms of academic study, right? Does that ring a bell with you or not really?
Moderately. What was the specifics? What was the specifics? What were the kind of things they were focused on?
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland you know, think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, three people won. Joel Roker, Philippe Agio of London School of Economics and the Collège de France, Peter Brown. Joel Roker is from Northwestern, a school close to your heart. And they won for explaining how innovation has infused national economies and allowed what we think economic growth. Literally for 8,800 years of human history, there was no economic growth. Until the Industrial Revolution, most economics was pure sustainability. Like right. You raised what you needed to live, and then you moved on. Kings and princes and people like that accumulated wealth, but nobody else even rose. We have this notion in America that our children should be better off than we are. No one thought anybody would ever get any better off. It was the peasantry and a very tiny, tiny elite for 8,000 years of human history. The Industrial Revolution changed that. And what Moker, Agio, and Hallett wrote about was, what does innovation look like? How does it enable economic growth? And how does economic growth, widespread economic growth across an economy, the way we grow, the way China grows, how does that enable everybody to have a higher standard of living? Moker focused on that. Aggio and Howitt focus on something, a concept in economics and business called creative destruction, which is where something new comes along that's really wonderful and valuable, but it leaves damage in its wake. And their famous example, there are lots and lots and lots of examples, is simply the telephone. We started with a telephone where you had to use an operator. Then telephones moved to being all self-dialing. We put all those operators out of business. Then we moved from the dial telephone to the push-button telephone. Then we moved to cell phones, and we took all those landline phones out of operation and all those people who manage those networks out of operation. And so that's a perfect example. Everybody's happy they have their iPhone instead of a phone connected to a wall with a cord, which was the world you and I grew up in. If you wanted to talk to your friends in high school, you literally had, you could only wander as far as the phone cord would let you, as long as mom would let you talk on the phone. Right. And so, but along the way and all those innovations, lots of people were put out of work. And so that's what they focus on. So this is about how countries and societies and civilizations can lift up everybody with innovation. And their point, the point of these three people who did this work was to say, once you understand how it happens, the Industrial Revolution wasn't quite an accident, but it wasn't being guided by anybody. Once you understand how this kind of innovation and creativity infuses into an economy and lifts everybody, you can guide it. You can encourage it. That's what NIH is. That's what funding for the University of Texas and the University of Michigan.
Okay, but how does this then apply to, like, I mean, we're seeing this with AI is the next bit of innovation.
It applies hugely.
And it's going to wipe out millions and millions of jobs. Is this an apologia for the destruction that comes with?
No. The whole point is exactly what you're talking about. Now we understand it. We should actually be able to see these transitions, if not coming, in process. We can see the transition in process right now. If you're a paralegal, if you're a computer programmer, AI is starting to do your work. We should bridge those people who do that work to new roles. We shouldn't just shrug and say, oh, well, too bad, AI put you out of business. And my favorite topic that we never talk about, we should be taxing the robots. Because if a robot does the work of a computer programmer, pure profit, and then we have no money to sustain the society. So tax the robots. But yes, their point is we should now be using our insight to continue to have a compassionate and valuable society, and also to continue to spark this kind of innovation.
I'm going to jump around just a little bit because I don't want another second.
One second. I just want to say one final thing.
Yes.
Two of those Nobel winners, Mokyr and Howitt, missed the call from Sweden that they'd won the Nobel Prize and were notified by reporters. Two of them, the reporters reached them before the Nobel Committee did. That's kind of amusing.
All right. I want to jump around a little bit because I don't want another minute to go by without talking about the heist at the Louvre. They stole crowns and jewels and whatnot in broad daylight from the Louvre. Now, I've never been to the Louvre. You, as a world traveler, have. Were you tempted to make off with anything? And what do you make of this heist, this high-end heist?
So the amazing thing about the heist, they parked a kind of ladder truck, almost a bucket truck, next to the Louvre. They were all wearing yellow vests, and they even had orange traffic cones to sort of say, we belong here. This device belongs right alongside the wall, the outside wall of the Louvre. They went up to the second floor. They used something called an angle cutter, which is just like a cordless drill with a disc on it that can, you know, that whirls real fast and can cut things. And they cut into the window of the Louvre. They removed the window, jumped in. They knew exactly what gallery and what window they were going into. They grabbed, you know, they grabbed fistfuls of jewelry. They climbed back out and left. So this whole thing took 8 minutes. They sped off on pre-positioned high-speed motor scooters or motorcycles. They left the ladder truck. They actually tried to burn the ladder truck, and they failed. So they're very hopeful of getting good evidence from the ladder truck, which the thieves thought would be destroyed. But there's a couple of things. There's a couple of things that are easy. First of all, they were only inside the Louvre for 4 minutes. The Louvre was open. It was Sunday morning. They immediately triggered the alarms. The police were on. I was amazed that they didn't catch him. The police were on the way, but the guys managed to get away anyway. There were 4 minutes to inside the museum to conduct your theft is pretty impressive. But between you and me, I mean, I don't know how you feel. I go to museums. I love a good museum. The museum guards have always seemed a little absurd. The point of the museum guards is to prevent you and me and our six-year-old children from touching things.
They're not heavily armed. They're not a attack squad.
If you so much as come near us, we'll take the angle grinders to your fingers.
Yeah, but I'll be honest. I read that sentence. I read a sentence that said they were threatened. They threatened the guards with an ackle, with the whatever grinder.
Angle grinder.
I'm seriously?
Right.
Like, seriously, you're a guard? Right, whatever,
right.
You're holding up a saw?
Come at me with angle grinders.
Don't they have guns? Why? This is why we need a good guy with a gun. Like, shoot him dead.
Yeah, I'm sure in European museums, the museum guards do not have guns. I'll be honest, the museum guards in American museums also don't have guns. You don't want somebody to grab the gun off the guard. That's the hazard there. Police officers worry about that all the time, and they're trained.
And then,
they're not all but useless, but they're all but useless. And the most entertaining thing to me was they took so much loot that they dropped stuff as they were leaving. They dropped one of the premier pieces they stole, the crown of Napoleon's wife, Eugenia. It's a crown.
What an unfortunate name, really. Eugenia.
Embedded.
I mean, wanted a son named Eugene, and they just stuck an IA on the end. That's pathetic.
It's IE. It's Elizabeth France, and you know nothing about the name Eugenie or her. I don't think you know anything about that. But the crown that Napoleon gave her.
I'd like to specify.
Hold on, wait a second.
I'd like
Jeffrey's
to specify. Yeah. Napoleon III, please.
Okay, Napoleon III.
There
okay.
you go. I knew,
Thank you,
I knew, I knew he would help us. That's, of course, what I meant. I just thought the audience would know Napoleon III. The crown has 1,354 diamonds on it and 56 emeralds. And they dropped it on the ground as they were leaving. They had so much stuff they couldn't handle it. So there you go. They dropped.
Yeah, the other thing that's interesting to me, by the way, you can get diamonds at Robert Irwin Jewelers during their 48th anniversary sale, 48% off.
I would be surprised if they have 1,354 diamonds in the whole store.
They do, I'm sure. Here's the thing. They didn't. My understanding is that none of this stuff is ever going to be recovered. Like the painting, The Scream, was once stolen from a art gallery in the Netherlands, and they get it back because there's a painting called The Scream.
In Norway.
I'm sorry. Norway. Yeah. That's what I meant. And also in countries, they all look the same to me. But this, they didn't take identifiable paintings. They took jewels that they can just rip off the crown and sell it as jewels,
and
remount,
then
whatever
the
else. This stuff's never going to be recovered. It's gone.
Well, there's lots of theories. I heard a good theory last night, which is that often thieves like this sit on the material for a little while in case they get caught. Because if they get caught, they can trade the stuff they stole for lighter prosecution. If they've already disassembled it and sold it, and then they get caught, there's the theory that this stuff was sold for a collector, which is optimistic. Then it won't be broken up. But yeah, priceless. Okay. But yeah,
last topic.
You know
Cutter.
What?
Cutter has a base in Idaho. I didn't know.
You want this to be the last topic? Okay.
Oh, whatever. Yeah. We're going to run out of time shortly.
I thought this was such a crazy story. This was not last Friday, but a week ago Friday. Secretary of War Hegseth announced that Qatar would be building a base in Idaho. The nation of Qatar would be building an Air Force base in Idaho. There was immediate, wild outrage across the political spectrum. Why are we letting another nation build a military base in our country in Idaho? In fact, he was wrong, and he corrected himself. Laura Loomer, of all people, called this an abomination before it was corrected. They're just going to be training Qatari Air Force pilots at a U.S. military base in Idaho. It's called Mountain Home Air Base. Here's why. The Qataris are buying F-15s. They're buying 36 of them. We want to encourage that. But an F-16 has a typical speed of 650 miles an hour. and a combat speed of 1,650 miles an hour, and Qatar is 100 miles long and 50 miles wide. At top speed, 4 minutes start to finish. You can't train in your new F-15 in Qatar. So they wanted to train in a place that looked like Qatar, which is Idaho. The United States has 129 military bases in 48 countries around the world. Not training centers, actual U.S. military bases. So it wouldn't be appalling if we let somebody have one here. But we want them to buy the jet.
This is a lot like when I go get a new minivan. I want to take it out on the highway. You know, I don't just want to drive it around.
You cannot test drive the minivan.
I want to take it out on the highway. You know?
Right.
Thank you, Charles.
So Fishman. We want them to buy the jets, and then we want them to have fun with them.
C. Fishman is the on Twitter or X. Thanks, Charles.
Everybody, have a good week.
Hug your dog.
Also your spouse and your kids.
Whatever. Don't do too much hugging. Don't let the hugging get out of control. Jeffrey, what's coming up next?
Jeff, here's what's coming up next on Jason and John. Jessica Benson joins their program today. Tim Murray will be with me on Jeffrey Wright and Company. Jeff with Gabe at 5 o'clock.
Thanks for listening, everybody. We will be back tomorrow for Now Work's Done.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.